Hare Krishna, the sixth key, neglect the mind, chapter 9, japa book. There's no way around it. If you want to chant good japa, you have to neglect the mind. This is, of course, not the end of our practice. This is not the International Society for Mind Neglect. Mind neglect, as an ultimate purpose, is the focus of Buddhism. Those who practice Vipassana meditation, for example, try to experience their sense stimulation as separate from the mind's interpretation of those experiences. Eradicating their interpretations, they believe, will remove the essential experience of human suffering. Vipassana adherents and others on similar paths therefore simply observe the mind, slowing it down and ultimately trying to stop it from interacting with sense perception. Observe the mind does quiet it, and when it is quieted, the mind reverts to its natural state in the mode of goodness, uninfluenced by passion and the plan-making intelligence. Buddhists are not wrong to think that by slowing the mind, they can realize something beyond matter. Sattvam Sanjayate Garam, says Bhagavad Gita 14:7. Rajaso Loba Evacha Pramada Moha Tamaso Bhavato Agyaram Evacha. From the mode of goodness, real knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed develops. And from the mode of ignorance, develops foolishness, madness, and illusion. Usually, we accept the mind as the self, as our authority, and reactively try to appease it. When the intelligence joins this conspiracy and begins to react, reformulation and plan, we touch the creator of the intelligence, the mode of passion. We may think that we have just to make this one plan before we can return to attentive chanting. But as soon as we allow the mode of passion to increase, the mind and intelligence move quickly. To return the mind to the simple task of listening to the mantra, to the mode of goodness, becomes almost impossible. Befooled, we have again accepted our mental fluctuation as vital, as more essential to our well-being than listening to Krishna's names. Better to neglect the mind. Don't take it seriously. We'll not be able to chant proper japa until we apply this key, at least while we're chanting japa. Picture the mind as a projector projecting on smoke. What will we see? Perhaps we will make out the form of a tiger or a train racing towards a car or someone of the opposite sex. But smoke has no substance. Similarly, none of the mind's imagery, no matter how intensely the mind presents it, has substance. Again, pull the tricky mind back by assigning it the simplest of tasks. Chant one Maha Mantra and listen to it. If we make the task complicated, if we try to chant all our rounds at once, then we will be forced to plan how to accomplish it. How will we listen to so many mantras at once? How will we remain attentive through so many mantras? The mind will demand answers and the intelligence will be forced to supply them soon. The mode of passion will carry us away. The mind is not to be trusted. Maharaj Prakrit asked Sukadev Goswami an important question. Why didn't Rishabdev use his mystic powers even for the good of others? After all, Rishabdev is the supreme personality of Godhead. He cannot be bewildered by Maya or deviated from the devotional path the way Jivas can. Sukadev Goswami responds, my dear king, have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's actions. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:62. It is dangerous to let the mind run wild. All the learned scholars agree. The mind is by nature restless, and we should not make friends with it. If we place our full trust in the mind, it can cheat us at any moment. Even Lord Shiva, the great ascetic, was sexually agitated when he saw Lord Vishnu's Mohini Murti form, and Sobhari Muni fell down from his mature stage of yoga perfection after watching fish copulate. Sukadeva Goswami continues, an unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours, and it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramour. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruitive activities. What learned man would put faith in the mind? Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.45. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada asserts that the mind is the original cause of material bondage. End quote. These are not the sweet instructions most of us long for. In fact, they may fill us with fear. Yet, they are vital to our Krishna consciousness. It is an imperative that we understand the reality of our precarious situation in this world. Fortunately, Srila Prabhupada provides a solution. Always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. Don't trust it, neglect it, especially while you're chanting japa, and engage it simply in hearing the mantra. But a problem arises. They say, what we resist persists. Therefore, we may require some additional techniques for controlling the mind. The mind has a taster of mundane rasa. The truth is that unless we have something spiritually relishable on which to focus the mind will not stay controlled. Determination is rarely enough. The mind wants to taste. In its mundane form, it relishes the material emotion evoked by the world's dualities. When we think of pleasant things, our family, our friends, for example, we feel the heart, the seat of the mind's emotions expand. When we think of unpleasant things, our enemies or our trauma, the heart contracts. This expansion and contraction is actually the mind tasting emotions. We tend to think that the mind wishes to taste only the sweetness of friendship or success, but it tastes negatively with equal vigor. Each side of a duality creates an opposite but equally powerful feeling. Because the mind wants to taste both poles, it will drag us from pleasure to pain and back again. If we think we can focus only on positive emotions, we are deluding ourselves. This is the relative world. Everything that creates positive emotions has its counterpoint part in the negative. There is no meaning to friend without enemy. Traveling between dualities is how the mind keeps us engaged in materialism, forcing us to remain in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Although we want to taste the pleasure of friendship without tasting the pain of enmity, to taste the pleasure of success without the misery of failure, to taste love without hate, we are unable. Still, we become bound by the desire and by our attachment to emotional experience in this world. Every emotion can only be defined against its opposite. The mind can literally keep us engaged forever in the struggle between dualities. If only. Those of us who are getting older can see that as we age, we lose some of our power to engage in material activities. We were once more physically active, but now our knees are weak and our shoulders hurt, our teeth are beginning to fall out, and our vision is blurred. Our bodily parts are gradually or quickly breaking down. Seeing young people running or doing any of the things we can no longer do reminds us of our youth. We think, if only I could run again. The mind grasps such thoughts and magnifies them, and immediately a seed of desire is planted that will fructify in the next life. Yes, it then becomes likely that we will run again. What have we missed out on in this life? What have we seen others possess that we wanted intensely but lacked? Was it beauty? Was it strength, wealth, knowledge, success? What color hair have you always wished you had? Have you envied and longed for the fame others have enjoyed? Do you desire to have your coffers overflowing with money? A more beautiful and affectionate spouse? If only I had been more intelligent. Or if only I had a better memory. Or if only I was taller, or shorter, or more handsome, or I had straighter or more curly hair. What do we wish still to taste? People accept these mental fluctuations and embrace them, thinking, quote, I could have been happy if only, end quote. These fanciful, dreamy thoughts are neither innocent nor harmless. Rather, as hopeful desires in the mind, they are the fixed thoughts that carry us from birth to birth to birth, an endless future of aimless wandering. It is far better to find a spiritual focus. Don't listen to the mind's continuous, quote, if only reveries, especially when chanting japa. The only reverie worth listening to is the one that says, quote, if only I had love for Sri, Sri, Radha, and Krishna, end quote. Nothing else has any value. Neglect the mind that does not take you to Krishna. But if the mind becomes attached to the hankering to become a true devotee, don't neglect that mind. All other emotional attachments will trap us in the material world and effectively stop our japa. We will be forced to fulfill our long list of desires or dreams, our search for happiness in the desert of material life. Will we actually be happy if we never learn to hold the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in the heart? Don't find yourself asking 40 years from now, why did I neglect to hear the holy names? We have been given so much hope. Nama Chintamani Krishna. The holy name is a touchstone. When Chintamani touches base iron, it turns the iron to gold. Similarly, Krishna's holy name can turn the iron of the heart into the gold of the desire to serve Krishna. But for that to happen, we have to embrace the holy name with our consciousness. It is simply not possible to embrace the holy name while thinking of an incessant succession of mundane hopes. Hare Krishna, that's the end of chapter 9 of Japa. Hare Krishna.